webcasting to the world the good news of God's righteousness for the entire planet. This is the Gospel Revolution Radio Network. Greetings, you beautiful humans. This is Glenn Klein online. It's hump day, Wednesday, June 25th, 2008, the only June 25th, 2008 in the history of the Gospel Revolution. Welcome in on this Wednesday night, Glenn Klein online, hoping that we can help you over the hump of this midweek, and also glad to have you with us. Coming to you live from an undisclosed location in the northern outpost of the Gospel Revolution. Please welcome online now the president of the Gospel Revolution from a disclosed location in the greater Houston, Texas area, Mr. Michael Williams. Mr. President!
Always disclosed, always open, always honest. Hi.
Yeah, you're right out there, aren't you?
I'm out there. Always on the limb.
It's great to have you. I am actually coming to you from northern Wisconsin, ladies and gentlemen, and if you're intrigued as to what I am doing up here, it has occurred to me right prior to the webcast that I could invite you to the company's website to see live and in person what your friendly neighborhood radio talk show host does in his spare time, which is life coaching. All you have to do is go to birchwoodbest.com. It's all one word, birchwoodbest.com. And you will read all about a company that has been infused with the goodness and the grace and the peace of God. And so much so that I need to let you beautiful humans know that today I started my presentation before the office and factory workers of Birchwood Best, reciting the fact that George Carlin had passed away on Sunday, and that he was undoubtedly in a better place today. And ironically, Michael, that was the subject of our post, that this most anti-religious, very, what some people would call, heretical man who was a social commentator about the fallacy of religion, actually ended up in perfect peace and righteousness with God Almighty, according to the way that we see the Bible. And I feel good about that on this particular Wednesday night.
Oh, absolutely. I can just almost hear George Carlin when he first passed through to the presence of God. I can just hear the very first thing he said with that face kind of twisted up, saying, "Oh my God!" But he definitely is in the presence of God, and he now knows why he's there. I believe that he knows, even as he has been known. You see, God has known all along that George Carlin was righteous and holy and perfect, and now George knows that, even as God knows it. I believe that every degree of salvation that we experience here, he is based on the degree that we know that, or to the degree that we reject the other side of that, that religion. I mean, I think George lived a pretty healthy life because he rejected religion. So that's what I call half-saved. George, you're half-saved if you reject religion altogether, as he did. And the process of the complete salvation is when you begin to know even as you are known. And that process starts here. I don't know, though, Glenn, that there is a possible way. I just do not believe there is a possible way to know the fullness of what God knows about us while we're still here. And I believe that that is, in part at least, what Paul was making reference to, that when we step out of this particular realm and into the next in the presence of God, that we will know even as we are known. And that's what being in the presence of God is. Being in the presence of God is knowing what God knows about you. So to the degree that you want to experience the ever-present experience of knowing the presence of God, the presence of God is no less with any human being on this earth. It's the degree that you're aware of it is the only difference at all. But that stabilizing force comes into the life as we begin to know what God knows, and not as we begin to make up what we think about God. And that's basically what George Carlin rejected, is what people made up about God. So that's the reason I say he was half saved. He was totally redeemed, half saved. And now...
Yeah, he just did not know. And it kind of reminds me, Michael, of a famous quote from Gandhi, who said, "I would be convinced of Christ were it not for Christians."
Yes, absolutely.
And, you know, you very rarely hear the work or the concept of Christ derided in the media or by Christian critics. What you hear derided all the time, of course, is the Christian church, and rightfully so. But George Carlin, who was absolutely brilliant and, in my opinion, inspired by the Holy Spirit, never had a clue that there was God, or at least not for a long time in his adult life did he believe that there was a creator. And that's because people that say they represent him were so hypocritical and so irresponsible. And George Carlin is a brilliant man. And it kind of reminds me of the story that you've told many times, but I think it's worth retelling again. The time, I believe you were in Colorado, where you were sharing this gospel of God's grace and peace in front of a scientist, a Buddhist, and an atheist.
Yes.
And three relatively intelligent human beings. And by the end of the evening, all three, coming from three completely different perspectives, were all convinced of the logic and the efficacy of the work of the cross.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, atheism and Buddhism. And the weird thing was that I think the thing that convinced them of it was that they didn't have to give up atheism. They didn't have to give up Buddhism, and they didn't have to give up science. And so much of Christianity feels that the revelation of the gospel has to confront. But the gospel is not a confrontation. It is a revelation. And there is nothing that we need to confront people about. But instead, if God embraces them where they are, I mean, how much more should we be presenting a gospel that embraces people exactly where they are? There would be no controversy in people's hearts and minds such as was in George Carlin's at all. And every time that you heard him speak in controversy about a belief in God, you're exactly right. It was his dislike for the way that people who called themselves believers in God handled themselves and conducted themselves with other people. And he took that as a representation of the authenticity of God himself, and rightfully so, deemed that there was no such thing as a God or a deity. And which, as I say, he was better off for doing so. Now, I know that that sounds just absolutely bizarre, but he was better off for doing so. And I'm on my own here, Glenn?
Yeah, I just having a momentary technical difficulty here. This is Glenn Klein online. We've got Michael Williams, the president of the Gospel Revolution, from the home offices at Houston, Texas. Inviting you to participate on this Wednesday night, toll-free, 1-800-436-3260. That's the toll-free Glenn Klein online toll-free number, 1-800-436-3260. Sean O'Halloran, ready to take your calls in the Tampa Bay studios. I am in the Northern Outpost. I'm in an undisclosed location, Michael.
Yes, you are.
I'm kind of like,
you know where you are.
I'm kind of like Dick Cheney. I'm in an undisclosed location.
Well, let's hope that that's the only similarity.
were both men, as far as I know. And we've got lots to talk about tonight. We've got a number of emails queued up. But if you're listening live and it's between 9 and 10 o'clock Eastern Time in the United States of America, we invite you to participate. We're asking you to participate. We love when you participate at 1-800-436-3260. We've got emails. You can also, if you're listening on the archive and want to have your emails addressed, your questions, your comments, please send them to webcast@gospelrevolution.com. That address, once again, is webcast@gospelrevolution.com. As always, we will get to those as quickly as possible, but sometimes you might have to listen to a show or two in order to have your questions addressed, because we get on our tangents and we have lots of questions. And we also recognize that you beautiful humans benefit by hearing the gospel proclaimed in any way, shape, or form that it is. And, Michael, you were talking about George Carlin being partially saved, and that this gospel that we preach, we also always use that term, this gospel, but truly, when you get right down to it, it is the only gospel. Gospel literally means, in the original languages, good news. Yeah, and I love how you say it. If there's any bad news in the message, it's not the gospel.
Yes. If there's any bad news in the good news, it's not the gospel.
It's something that guys like George Carlin, perhaps even a different level, Tim Russert, who just passed away the week before, some of these notable figures who have gone on to eternity, never got, because they were so focused on the purveyors of filth and disgust known as evangelical Christianity that they could never get beyond the message that you must act a certain way or believe a certain way in order to be affected by the work of the cross. And this is our goal, and this is our passion, is to get people to understand that we have absolutely, positively nothing to do with our righteousness or redemption, period. No belief system, no faith, no prayer. It's very interesting that Dr. James Dobson took on the presumptive Democrat nominee for presidency of the United States, Barack Obama, for his interpretation of the Bible. And from what I could read, Obama was actually interpreting the Bible much more accurately than your typical evangelical Christian. And yet he took him on because Obama was actually daring to challenge people on things that are in the Old Testament, like if your children are disobedient, you're supposed to stone them to death. Nobody in their right mind in the 21st century would actually think that. But Dobson literally thought that he would make political points by criticizing Obama for actually having a brain to think and to question what was in what we call the Old Testament and what Jesus and the disciples called the Scriptures.
No, it's very true. I heard that little discourse, and it was quite interesting to hear the controversy that we actually expound on and try to expose in a in at least some light, kind of battled out between Obama and Dobson, actually. You know, one of the most brilliant things was that that I thought, regardless of any party persuasion either way or any candidate, but that Obama was trying to explain by pointing out some of those things in the law of the Old Covenant, the laws of God, that you could not govern by the laws of God, that you had to govern based on the principles that all people accept, and you know, it's amazing because Dobson has this pulpit that he never gets challenged from at all, And nobody ever, he never opens himself up to a challenge because his stance was absolutely ridiculous that that there was something wrong with what Obama had said about not being able to do that. You know, and the bizarre thing is, Glenn, is that while that is true, that we you absolutely have to divorce yourself from the laws of God to govern, the fact of it is, the more you embrace the gospel, the more accurately you can govern in a republic and in a democracy.
Say that again, please.
Well, the more that a person embraces the gospel, the more accurately I believe that you can govern in a republic such as what we have here in the U.S. Because the republic is a it's a freedom. It's based on freedom, and a lot of times people here in the United States, and our presidents say it, our legislators say it, our judiciary says it. They say that we are a government of laws, and that just is not true. We are not a government of laws. We are a government of freedoms, and that is one of the major things that's wrong in Washington, is this false presumption that we are a nation of laws. We are a nation of freedoms. And that's why that so many freedoms have been eroded over the years in many different administrations in many different ways, and abuse of power and all of these things is because that when you govern by law, you lose perspective of the people, because you cannot govern by law and it be of the people, by the people, and for the people. What is of, by, and for the people is its freedom. It's the republic. This is the republic for which it stands. It is not, this is the democracy for which it stands. Our government is not run by a democracy. Our government is run by a republic. Our officials are elected in a democratic fashion. But it is not run as a democracy. Now, the fact of it is that we've brought a lot of, quote, democracy in, which the term democracy in its most basic definition means mob rule. It's the majority rule. And this is not a nation where the majority gets its say-so. The majority gets to say so.
And thank God for that.
Yes,
this is
for the oppression.
Online. This is our civics lesson 101 tonight on the Gospel Revolution webcast. You weren't expecting it, ladies and gentlemen.
Don't get me started.
What, Mikey?
The don't get me started.
No, well, we already got you started, and I want you to continue, but first we want to welcome online our correspondent from beautiful Cincinnati, Ohio, Mr. Greg Amberge, who's online. Gregory!
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, I've been informed by Sean O'Halloran, our executive producer and engineer and call screener extraordinaire, that I have already used two words of George Carlin's seven words that you're not allowed to use on broadcasting.
Yeah, apparently there's only five words you're not allowed to say on the webcast.
Evidently, because we've already used the other two.
I remember feeling tremendous guilt as a young man, laughing my butt off, listening to George Carlin, and then I would go back to church and feel tremendous guilt that I had enjoyed his irreverent humor so much.
I wanted to welcome Greg on because we want to hear from the heartland of America. But Michael, before we get to Greg's points, and I want to kind of focus in on this whole concept of the gospel being the best way to rule. Please retell the story of you sharing the gospel. I believe it was in Virginia. with a constitutional expert. You didn't know that he was a constitutional expert. And what his reaction was to your articulation of the gospel of the grace and peace of God through Jesus Christ.
Well, yes, and I, you know, I don't even have to share that information, you know, in any discretion to protect his identity. He's very proud of the fact of where he's come from. His name's John Hall, and John was a special agent with the FBI. In fact, was head of the legal department with the FBI for, I think, about a decade, and served all the way from Hoover all the way through 9/11, and was held over 2 years. That's the reason he's a 32-year veteran of the FBI. There virtually are no 32-year veterans of the FBI, but he was held over 2 years because of 9/11, because in the FBI you serve exactly 30 years and that's it. And but anyway, not only was he head of legal counsel for the FBI and served under all these administrations, I remember going to Quantico with him, and my goodness, it was like royalty walking in the building. I had an awesome experience of going there, watching them practice in their little town that they built there and everything. But as I got to know John, I've come to know that he was a historian, also a historian, and a constitutional expert, and taught the Constitution, actually, to for the FBI, so that the people coming into the FBI would understand the Constitution. He taught it. He carried a copy of the Constitution in his shirt pocket constantly. I don't care where you ever see John Hall. If you ask him what's in his shirt pocket, he will pull out a copy of the Constitution of the United States. Anyway, John had been challenged to listen to the CD series entitled The Redemption of the World, the three CD series that was recorded in your living room.
Yes,
and
before the throngs of thousands in my living room.
Yes, before the thousands in your living room. Thousands have definitely listened to it, probably tens of thousands, but he was on a trip that he started listening to that series, and he told me at a later time, within about 6 months after his first experience with the gospel, that he listened to that Redemption of the World three times through on this drive that he had to make. And in the process, he told me, after having then, of course, listened to lots of other tapes and CDs and whatever he had available, and had come to conferences that I had done. And we later became friends, he and his wife and I, and in one of our dinners together, we were sitting and talking, and he said, "Michael," he said, "I don't know if you know this or not," he said, "but you teach the Constitution of the United States government." And I said, "What do you mean?" And he said, "It has been absolutely remarkable to me to sit and listen to someone preach the gospel of Jesus Christ, and have no disagreement with our entire Constitution that governs our nation." And he said, for the first time in my life, and him having spent over 30 years at that time in the FBI. He was still in the FBI at this time. And he told me, he said, after all of these years of my life, he said, "I had no clue that there was the gospel actually validated the Constitution of the United States, and the Constitution of the United States was actually formed out of the gospel." He said, "That concept, the concept of our Constitution, only exists in the gospel. It does not exist anywhere else except in the gospel. It does not exist in any other form of government. Our Constitution does not exist in any other form of democracy." And so my passion for the Constitution, as we've shared, was, as I've been sharing with you, and the understanding that this is a republic, not a democracy, and understanding the difference in those things came out of my endearing relationship with John Hall and his wife. And all of our many, many late long conversations on trips and dinners and all of these things. So yeah, it really is an amazing thing. And then I had to go back and read the Constitution again. And I realized how powerful it was that, you know, people that are saying that this is a Christian nation, if they only based Christianity was based on the gospel, you could say it was a Christian nation, and we would want every nation to be a Christian nation. But the fact of it is that Christianity, as Carlton Pearson brought to us just a few weeks ago, is the cult that raised up around the person of Jesus Christ. It is not a representation of the gospel of Jesus Christ. It is a cult that raised up. It's a cult following of Jesus Christ. It is not a proclaimer of the gospel of Jesus Christ. And our nation stands in threat by Christianity, not in being defended by Christianity. It stands threatened by Christianity because Christianity has rejected the gospel on which our Constitution is truly based. According to a constitutional expert and a historian, that you could ask him anything about world history, and he can give you dates and times and persons. And that's where these things begin to really formulate. It was actually during this time, Glenn, that my security in believing and feeling that it was in my heart to reach the entire planet with this gospel really solidified, because I knew that the greatest hope this planet has as far as a nation on this earth is concerned, I really do believe, is the United States of America. And my love for this country is endless. And then I realized that the only way that this country is as strong as it is because of the gospel. And it just blew me away, because I had become so adverse to hearing the preachers on TV saying this is a Christian nation, because I knew it wasn't a Christian nation. But the fact of it is that our Constitution is a gospel-based Constitution, but it has nothing to do with the cult that sprang up as a follower of Jesus called Christianity.
Well, we were talking earlier. This is Glenn Klein online. We got Michael Williams of the Gospel Revolution, Greg Amberge, our Cincinnati correspondent from appraisingstuff.com, and inviting you to participate as well. The email address, if you're listening on the archive or live and you want to be heard, is webcast@gospelrevolution.com. That address is webcast@gospelrevolution.com. We were talking earlier, Michael, off the air, about the reality of the freedom that Christ infused somehow into the earth through the gospel, and then the Declaration of Independence, where it establishes that all men are created equal, endowed by their Creator. Okay, so we acknowledge that there is a Creator, and that we have the right for the pursuit of life, liberty, and happiness.
Yes.
And one way that you have articulated it through time, Michael, is that follow your heart. And really, that's what the framers of the Constitution were saying. You've been endowed by God, now follow your heart.
Absolutely.
And if I don't know any better articulation of the gospel and the freedom, the Bible says it was for freedom that Christ set us free, that is better articulated than that. Than that which is in the Declaration of Independence. Your heart is basically what they were saying. And,
absolutely. This is a government by which we are self-governing people. We do not have a government over us. We are self-governing people. And that's exactly what we've been teaching, that the power of the gospel has done. God is not trying to govern over your life. That God has made you self governing. That is the freedom in which you have been set free. It is for freedom that Christ has set us free. You are self-governing. And remember when we went into the issue of the fruit of the Spirit, which one of the expressions of the fruit of the Spirit is self-control. And I remembered years ago, Glenn, I started teaching on this, and it just blew me away because I'm standing up there, and it's one of those learning times while I'm opening my mouth. And I started teaching about the expression of the fruit of the Spirit called self-control. And I challenged the whole issue of getting up and surrendering the control of your life over to God. And I asked, why would God give you self-control if he wants control? God does not want to control your life. He wants you to self-govern. He wants you to have dominion over yourself. And you decide what type of life you want. It is so incredibly empowering. Just
right. And also within the context, or I should say especially within the context of knowing no matter what choice one makes from one's heart regarding the understanding of self-dominion, that the righteousness regarding our relationship with God will not be affected one iota.
Yes, absolutely. And that's what gives you the freedom to self-govern, is that you're not living in dread of the sovereign over you, disciplining you or correcting you for what you've done. You get to develop the power to see what your actions actually do without entering into the equation the false presumption that these consequences to your actions, good or bad, are an intervention of God somehow. Because those are the things that paralyze someone from being able to walk in freedom and experience the power of God. The power of God isn't when God shows up. The power of God is when you show up. Because God has set you free to show up and to be. People are sitting waiting for God to show up.
He showed up, didn't he, Michael?
He showed up 2,000 years ago and freed us. He didn't just free us, Glenn and Greg. He empowered us. And to discover that empowerment, you must first be freed from the thing that George Carlin got set free from, and that was religion, what he detested so much. And so much of that man's creativity came out of his freedom from religion. Can you imagine if George Carlin hadn't been freed from religion?
What I was going to say was that I sensed in parlance that many of our listeners can understand that there was a certain anointing on George Carlin's life that resulted in tremendous creativity and articulation of truth that made us laugh. And even as our correspondent Greg Ambery, who's online with us, talked about a guilty pleasure that we received from that creativity. And I just want to remind everybody we're about, we're over halfway through already on this edition of Glenn Klein Online. Gospel Revolution, it's the truth, ladies and gentlemen. The truth is Jesus himself. He said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. He said that no one comes to the Father but through him, through me. And we say yes and amen. And he didn't ask for your permission. He didn't ask for anybody's permission. He just came right in and decided to redeem everybody. And that through him, everyone, and when we say everyone, we mean everyone, will be saved. I think, Greg, this segues perfectly into a story that you were telling me earlier in the week about you being online with your son, or your son was on playing a video game. You know, folks, these video games now that the kids have, Greg's son, my kid plays online with people all over the world. And apparently, one of the kids that your son was playing the game Halo with was trying to evangelize him. And it's a classic story of freedom and revelation and just God stuff.
My one of my son's friends is he's a brilliant kid. He's going to the Air Force Academy. He's just so smart, it's almost scary, and just a great kid, the kind of kid everybody wants, you know, to have. He came down, he was staying all night at our house last Saturday. He came down, he said, "Hey, Mr. Amberg, I need to talk to you." And I said, "What's it?" He said, "Tell me about this Jesus saves everybody thing." And I said, "What brought that on?" And he said that he and Adam were playing Halo with some guy who was trying to convert them. The guy's his online name was Christ Boy or something, and he was trying to convert them while they were playing Halo. And Adam just said, "We don't have to worry about that. Jesus took care of it." And that was the end of it for Adam. He had won the argument. He didn't want to talk about it anymore. He wanted to play Halo. And so Nate had asked Adam later, "What did you mean by that?" And he said, "To get to all the details, just talk to my dad." And so Nate wanted to know where this was coming from. And I sat down and first I said I didn't really want to undermine his parents' authority and talk about something that I think I should talk to them about first before I try to, you know. But he said his parents didn't go to church and they didn't care. And so I shared the gospel with him. In 5 minutes, he got it. He completely got it. And he's been going to an evangelical church for quite a while. And he said, all my questions just got answered in 5 minutes.
Yeah.
He said, I had a bunch of questions that nobody would talk to me about. And that's the simplicity of the gospel, that people that understand things like the Constitution, for instance, and understand that, you know, that we are free in this country to make our decisions and determine our destiny to a certain extent. People that understand that, they get the gospel right off the bat. And are you still there?
Yeah. Go right ahead, Greg.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, anyway, just a second. I have to let my wife in. What you guys are talking about tonight is especially exciting to me because I just finished reading a book about Benjamin Franklin, and it goes into a lot of the depth about how not the Constitution, but the Declaration of Independence was originally written, and Franklin had a little bit of an input into it. Thomas Jefferson was the main writer of the Declaration of Independence, and it sort of spells out what the United States is all about. That's where the life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness came from.
Yeah.
And those guys were, I believe, from my studying of history, certainly not Christians as we think of evangelical Christians. They were deists in a lot of ways, who had an understanding of God, but really kind of rejected the religion of the day. Especially Franklin actually left Boston, his hometown, because he was in a dispute with Cotton Mather of the Puritans. He had taken him on, in his moralistic ways as a teenager, a teenage publisher in Boston, and that's kind of what made it convenient, shall we say, for him to move to Philadelphia, because the Puritans didn't like the way he was taking them on in public. And that was the spirit of the guys that came up with our republic.
Absolutely. And, you know, Greg, there are more than just a couple of the signers of the Declaration of Independence who were atheists. And they were of all different persuasions, but they all came to one dynamic conclusion, and that is the power of freedom, the power of liberty,
and our Constitution protects us from the tyranny of the majority.
Yes, absolutely.
And I think that's where we're having a lot of struggle in our country right now with issues like gay marriage and the Supreme Court's ruling today that certain death penalty laws are unconstitutional. Because the majority is all in favor of the death penalty for child molesters, and the Supreme Court said it's unconstitutional today.
Right.
And our government is a protector of liberties from the tyranny of the majority.
Absolutely. It's one of the greatest civics lessons that anybody could ever get. And at the same time, it's one of the greatest gospel messages that, you know, that the power of God is there to protect our liberties. That's what the power of God is. I mean, the reason that we were set free is to be free. We were not set free to serve. We weren't set free to join the group. We weren't set free to keep the way, or do the thing, or recruit people. We were simply, for freedom is why Christ has set us free.
And amen. I've been watching a little bit of the Lakeland Revival on YouTube.
Oh, really?
Yeah, just because I think 25 years ago I would have been, you know, on a plane on my way to Lakeland to get me some of that.
I hear you.
But
I thought it was just because you were into pornography.
No. No, but
just kidding,
the Lakeland,
just
if you've
kidding.
Seen any of that, which is just like hyped version of what happened in the Toronto Vineyard and
yeah.
Brownsville and other places, you can look at those people and I don't see any freedom.
No.
There's no freedom there. There's some wild stuff going on and some outrageous claims and everything, but there's no freedom. And for me, that means Jesus isn't being preached.
No, of course not. And, you know, we've gone on for years, Greg, about the whenever you see the desperate need for an external expression of your spirituality that is a blatant measure of the degree of the lack of internal freedom. And there is not an external expression to validate your spirituality. And that is where that all of these movements are all so very negative in their long-term impact.
And the other amazing thing is, too, if you listen to the evangelicals that are denouncing the revival, and can hear I don't know, it's like a spirit of bondage that's got them in control, too.
Yes, absolutely.
It's amazing how both sides of that, if you're either for it or against it, are coming at it from just such an ungospel place.
Yeah, there's no freedom on either end. Yeah, it's, you know, we want you to have our bondage rather than theirs.
Right.
Well, you know, and I know exactly what you mean, Greg, because obviously, having experienced that kind of bondage, we know exactly what those people are experiencing and not experiencing in that Lakeland Revival. And it's kind of like when you see the old archived footage of the huge Nazi rallies during Hitler's reign. Those people seem like they're empowered. They seem like they're full of vigor and energy and dynamism. But the matter is, they were as enslaved and under bondage as they possibly could be. We know that in retrospect. Well, that's how we look at these revivals, is we understand exactly what those people are experiencing, and most of them are experiencing a form of group hypnosis. And whether the guy is Rodney Howard Brown or Benny Hinn or the guys from Toronto or Brownsville, Mike Brown, who I knew back in the day, or this fellow in Lakeland who's all tatted up, and I mean, he looks about as counterculture as you possibly could be, but he might as well be Benny Hinn or Catherine Kuhlman, for that matter, in her white flowing gown. They are using the same exact techniques of bondage and suggestive hypnosis that has been used throughout the times of the media. And my heart goes out for those people. I mean, they are in for the disappointment of their life, and hopefully they'll end exactly where the folks in the Bible ended up, which is at the end of themselves, and at the end of the day, turn to their righteousness only in Christ. And as deep and as dark as it's been for us, I wouldn't change a thing, because it brought us to the end of ourselves.
Absolutely. I feel especially sorry for some of the kids that I've heard prophesied over with very, I think, life-damning personal prophecies that have gone out over YouTube and over God TV and all that, with these kids saying things that I immediately just went, oh my God, they're ruining that poor kid's life.
Yeah.
They're gonna go back and think about that for 20 years, and try to live their life so that it fulfills that prophecy. And it's just the most dangerous, damning thing that people do. I said one of George Carlin's words there. I'm sorry.
That three now?
I'm going to get off and let somebody else call in.
No, well, Greg, it's always phenomenal to have you check in with us. And thanks for your time, my brother.
Thank you, guys.
Greg.
There's Greg Amberge from Cincinnati, Ohio. And as Greg said, we have that third line available now. We've got about 15 minutes left on Glenn Klein Online. We want you to call us right now, 1-800-436-3260, 1-800-436-3260. The toll-free line is available if you're listening live, and it's about 9:45 on the eastern coast of the United States. So that means that line's available to you. We want to hear what you have to say tonight. So please give us a call, 1-800-436-3260. Sean O'Halloran, waiting to hear from you. Michael, we've got this email from our new friend Abraham from Stockton, California.
Yeah.
And it's quite a long question, and I'm going to try to abbreviate it. But he says, Mike, grace and peace to you, my awesome brother. What about me, Mike? Am I chopped liver or something? He says, Michael,
awesome
I
brother,
struggle
dude.
Sometimes. What?
You are an awesome brother, dude, Glenn.
Thanks. I like chopped liver, too. He says, I struggle sometimes trying to understand Paul's in the King James terminology and his use, or the translator's use, of the word shall. For example, 1 Corinthians 15:49-54. And as we have borne the image of the earthy, we shall also bear the image of the heavenly. 1 Corinthians 15:51. Behold, I show you a mystery. We shall not all sleep, but we shall all be changed. And then he goes on to quote to 1 Corinthians 15:54. He says, Michael, whenever I read these verses and try to articulate their meaning, the futureness of that word seems confusing to me.
Mm-hmm.
Why did not Paul or the translators, if they are culprits, just use words like in the twinkling of an eye, at the last trump, for the trumpet sounded and the dead were raised incorruptible and we were changed? Anyway, your thoughts and insight on the matter are most appreciated. Thanks so much for the loving effort and gift of all this amazing teaching. We are indeed so very blessed. I think that's a fair question. That's Abraham from Stockton, California.
Yeah,
Michael.
Very good question.
Yeah, good insight, Abraham.
Yes, very, very good. Abraham's thinking.
Yeah.
That means that's a sign of freedom when you begin to think. The terminology actually, I believe, is accurate, but you have to understand Paul as a teacher. One of the most incredible things that happened to me was to understand two things about Paul's teaching. Number one, he was a teacher of comparisons. He was a comparative teacher, and he always taught what he had to say compared to what somebody else thought or believed. It's actually a very powerful way to get your point across. But you have to know what the other person believes better than what they believe themselves, to be able to articulate that way. And not only did Paul teach by comparison, he taught in story form. It is so vitally important. I've done a lot of teaching in Hebrews here recently, and one of the things that I did, which we don't have on CD yet, we've got so much new stuff coming out all the time now, it's hard to get it all through the pipeline. But I just taught the first six chapters 2 months ago, I believe it was, maybe three, up in Dallas on the book of Hebrews. And the book of Hebrews, written by Paul, if you read it as a progressive story, we made mention of this last broadcast, I believe. When Paul teaches, he's teaching, the thing you must remember is he's talking about the point in the story where he is. So when he comes to the point to where he's teaching about the dead being being raised, he's telling them from that point in the story, this is what is to happen. The dead shall be raised. But if you go on to the end of it, he says in that very same chapter, he says that the culmination of this is, O death, where is thy sting? O grave, where is thy victory? For the sting of death is sin, and the strength of sin is the law. So you see the conclusion of the shall in the conclusion of the entire teaching. But you must never forget that Paul is a storyteller, and he teaches by comparison. And in the process of the storytelling, just like in the book of Hebrews, when he says, for we see not yet all things put under him, but we see Jesus, who was made a little lower than the angels for the suffering of death. Well, you see, he declared what he was saying. He said, at this point in my story about this, we see not yet all things put under Jesus' feet, but we see him coming in to the realm of mankind prepared for the point of death. And we know that it was through the point of death through which we saw him have all things put under his feet, including death, which death was the last enemy to be defeated. And the enemy of death was defeated. Because of a lack of, number one, just the understanding of the gospel, people pull these things out of context when you don't even have to know Paul's art of teaching. If we just knew how to keep our brain engaged in the story. Because even in, like I said, in chapter 15, the conclusion of the story of chapter 15 of Corinthians, about the twinkling of the eye and the raising from the dead, the conclusion of that chapter tells you that the shall has been, has happened. It's no longer a shall. It is an absolute conclusion. And, you know, and what I'm sharing with you right now is absolute pure gold. You need, people need this. It is one of those self-governing, understandings of Paul's writings that is so very powerful. You don't have to change anything to grasp Paul's writings. You just have to hold your brain in context. And that's where all the shalls work out. In every one of those situations, I guarantee you that later on you'll see that the shall is a, it has happened. But you have to stick with the story. Don't allow yourself to pull out of the middle. It's like going with Little Red Riding Hood. You know the end of the story of Little Red Riding Hood, but you can't stop with the fact that the three bears were asleep upstairs. You'd have the three bears asleep forever. you gotta read the rest of the story. And I'm probably getting all of my nursery rhymes mixed together here. But,
well, that's all right, Michael, because you can still teach the Bible, and that's really
there we go. I think I better stay away from the nursery rhymes.
I would say that's you know, George Carlin did call the Bible a fairy tale, but
yes.
That's where we depart from our brother George on that one. He just didn't have the understanding. But I think one of the reasons that people are so polluted in the way that they read the Bible is because that's how they've been trained. They've been trained to read one verse at a time, pull it out of context,
absolutely,
make an entire doctrine out of it, and then condemn most of humanity to hell because of it.
And totally, we don't do to Shakespeare what we do to the Bible. I mean, we honor Shakespeare far more than we honor the writers of even the New Testament, much less the inspired scriptures of the law, the Psalms, and the prophets. At least we read Shakespeare in context. At least we sit and listen to the whole story. We don't go in and sit in on one of Shakespeare's plays and get up and leave after, you know, after the first person has done their part in the play. And
not only that, but I mean, if somebody would suggest that we can be touched and enjoy the works of Shakespeare through reading one sonnet one line without the entire and in context writing of Shakespeare, I mean, people would be outraged with that. And yet that's exactly what people do with the ancient scriptures and the New Testament writings.
It really is true, and I so really am excited about the question, because these are things that to me are vitally important and very pertinent to the complete understanding of the gospel, because it is these things, as Abraham has brought to our attention, that are stumbling blocks for people. But believe me, and when, while there are things in the New Testament, let me say it very clearly, I just don't agree with. But you got to understand, there's things that some of the writers in the and of the New Testament that Paul didn't agree with. Paul said he didn't agree with.
Some of the things, those guys were literally, these are the saints that they've set up statues to in St. Basilica Square in the Vatican. And those guys were at war with each other, Michael.
Absolutely.
Far from just disagreeing, those guys were having a turf battle, for God's sake.
Absolutely. No doubt, and it is through the Book of Acts, and it is in their writings and their references to each other, you know, and James making his statement, "Thou O man, who says that it's by faith alone, you know, show me your faith without your works, and I'll show you my faith by my works." And who is "Thou O man"? What man was he referring to? There's only one man in their generation that taught that, and that was Paul. And when Paul said, those who seemed to be pillars in the church, who was it that seemed to be pillars in the church other than Peter, James, and John? Who else were they making reference to? When Paul said, "When I perceived that they walked not uprightly according to the truth, I rebuked Peter to the face." And it says in that very text in Galatians chapter 1, in referring to Peter, James, and John, Paul said, "When I saw that Peter, James, and John," read it for yourself, "Peter, James, and John, when he saw that they were not walking uprightly according to the truth, he rebuked Peter to the face." This
think,
is no mild disagreement.
You think he flipped them off?
Only you would come up with that, Glenn.
No, I don't think only me, but certainly that.
I think so. But
that's my role. Those guys had some serious issues with each other.
They were. I mean, this was a conflict of the ages, and I would love, man, one of the things as this gospel revolution goes on, one of the most exciting movies that will ever be produced is that conflict of the ages. And my gosh, what a wonderful, amazing story. If Hollywood picked it up now, it would be an incredible box office hit to actually bring out this dispute and to bring the two conferences together in the Book of Acts, the one in about just chapter 15, the other about chapter 20. The first one, their dispute with Paul about the Gentiles, and the next one, an entire chapter about their dispute with him, calling him in off his mission work of his proclaiming the gospel to challenge and contradict him about what he was saying. And
I've got the title for the movie.
What's that?
No Child Left Behind.
Very good.
Well, we started out with government talk tonight, and we're going to end with that. Ironically, it's a good concept. It's the gospel, ladies and gentlemen. No child, no man or woman is left behind in the gospel.
Yeah.
Hey, Mikey, real quick, as we're running out of time, give us a quick update on the Gospel Revolution Convention, the registration, and And how's that going there?
Oh, my goodness. It's going so well. The only thing that I can encourage you to do is get your reservation in quickly. The rooms are being snapped up even as we are speaking. And I've spoken with three of our families just from Mobile, Alabama, that are coming over to the conference. And the Parks, Robert and Linda Parks, are coming over. And Frank and Jan Alardo, my dear friends there, that both of these families have supported the gospel right on through. And then also Tony Blackman, my dear friend there, who did the interviews with me on The Last Trump, is going to be there also. I was just speaking with him via email earlier. He was wanting all the details so he could get his reservations in. So, we only reserved 50 rooms. So, you know, guys, just don't let these discounted rooms slip through your fingers. We'll do our best to extend them, which it looks like we're going to have to, but there is no guarantee because the Marriott is under no, the contract that we have with Marriott, they are under no obligation to extend that price of $109 down from about $185 to $190 for that same room. They are under no obligation to extend that beyond those 50 rooms. So,
yeah, and also, folks, if you are wanting to come on your own and want to split a room with somebody, we have lots of folks who want to do that. So just email us at webcast@gospelrevolution.com and let us know that you want to share a room with somebody. We'll hook you up, and with an appropriate number of the gender of your choice, and we will put that together so that you'll literally be able to divide that cost by 50%. We want to thank Greg Ambergy from Cincinnati and Abraham from Stockton, California, and for all you other folks who are waiting to hear your questions that you've emailed addressed to us, just be patient. We, as you know, do get to them. One thing I do want to recommend, and as I was traveling here in the northern climes of Wisconsin over the last couple of days, I was re-listening to Mike's teaching CDs on the faith of God, which you can get online at gospelrevolution.com. And particularly the first CD of that series, Michael, so encapsulates everything that we understand about the gospel to date. And if there's one CD that you folks could get and duplicate and say, here, just listen to this, it is so clear, it is so concise, it is so logical, it is so inspired, it is so wonderful, that anyone with an open heart and an open mind will be touched. That teaching CD series is called The Faith of God. All of Michael's teaching CDs and DVDs are available at gospelrevolution.com. As is all the information about the Gospel Revolution Convention in Houston, Texas, November 5th through the 9th, 2008. We certainly hope to see you there. And, Mikey, the hour goes by too quickly, as always.
It sure does. I want to go back and listen to this one.
Yeah, this was fun. And it's fun, folks. It's fun to understand that God has completely and utterly forgiven the entire human race, including you, who he loves without condition. He loves Sean O'Halloran as we do, our producer and engineer extraordinaire there in Tampa Bay. Until next week, this is Buck Klein Online saying, Shalom, everybody!